Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Brian Ellison. I am co-host of the Statehouse Blend podcast and a host and contributor here at KCUR.
Steve Vakrat, writer for The Pitch.
Jim McLean from the KHI News Service and other things at the Statehouse in Topeka.
Gentlemen, let's get deep into the sunflowers, but first here's the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
All right, so last week we talked about what to expect in the Missouri General Assembly. Today, we're moving on to Topeka to discuss what we can expect in the next 90 days or 100 days, 114 days from Kansas lawmakers. Going to talk a little bit about Governor Brownback's State of the State. Jim McLean was there to cover that. I'm going to touch on some state law enforcement issues. But to get the podcast going, I want to take the first trip around the table and ask each one of you what you expect to see, what you think may be the dominant issue in the Kansas legislature. I'm going to start with you, Jim McLean, a veteran of many sessions. Don't get me wrong, you still look like a young man, but a veteran of many a session,
Sam,
at the
you flatterer
at the State House. Jim, what are you looking for?
Well, I think it's going to be a pretty uneventful session. I think they're looking to get in and out as quickly as possible in this election year, and I think obviously the budget and the revenue situation is going to be at the top of the list. But then there's that wild card of whatever happens with the school finance case that you've covered so well. And so I think they're going to really try to. There are going to be very few kind of moving parts in this session, and Speaker Merrick is determined just to kind of keep them, you know, headed. And they want to get out. I think they want to get out early. They don't want to repeat certainly what happened last year, the longest session in state history and the largest tax increase in state history.
Susan Wagle said 75 days. What do you think about that, Jimmy?
I think that's probably optimistic, but you know, it's clearly what they're shooting for. Yeah.
Steve Vakrat, what are you looking for?
One of the things I'm going to be watching, and I'm planning on doing some writing about it here in the next few weeks, is the situation with the state mental hospital in Osawatomie.
Yep.
And I'll be interested to hear some of what you, because you guys have done a great job of covering
Thanks,
that, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
But as we know, there were some high-profile incidents recently, including a staff member who was raped by a patient there, and the incident was broken up by two other patients, not other staffers, which suggests that there are serious problems. The feds have caught wind of it, obviously, and they have suspended their funding to the hospital. And so, you know, is the more talk we hear about, you know, mental health as sort of a subset of the violence that's broken out across the country over the year, I'm going to be interested to see what the legislature, if they put their money where their mouth is and actually does something about that issue.
Yeah. I want to, before we get to Brian, I just want to just explore that just a little bit more and ask, what, if anything, can the legislature do? I mean, do you think that there's some money to be had or something they can do to try to alleviate the mess that is in Osawatomie?
Well, I think it's really good that he brought that up because I think it is a major issue. In fact, when they got the budget briefing the other day and the joint, you know, Senate and House budget committees, several legislators raised the issue of Osawatomie. The problem is there isn't a lot more money. What I'm hearing, and it's, I think there's real discussions going on behind the scenes about privatizing the clinical services of Osawatomie as a way of getting the state out from under the financial burden of that. And the deal would be you'd hand it over to some entity that would manage it and provide the clinical services in exchange for some capital and physical improvements to the hospital, which is what the feds are looking for. And that would also – they have a huge problem both at Osawatomie and Larned, the other state hospital for the mentally persons with mental illness, in terms of recruiting and retention of staff for different reasons. And so I think that they think they can solve all those problems. So I wouldn't be surprised if that surfaces here pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to come back to some retention and recruiting issues a little bit later. But first, Brian, what are you looking for in the next 90 days, 75, 100, whatever?
Right, and I think it might be more. It'll be more than 75, I'm pretty sure about that. In fact, I should be more interested in the policy issues coming before the legislature. But I'm actually really watching the political ramifications of what I think is going to be a growing split between the moderate Republicans and the more conservative ones in the the Republican caucus. I think Sam Brownback's approval rating, now 26%, the lowest of any governor in the nation, is going to drive a wedge between him and some of the conservatives who have supported him in the legislature, who have to distance themselves a little bit from him.
Heading into an election.
As they're facing re-election campaigns. It'll be interesting to see what effect that has on policy. I think Jim is totally right. I don't think we should look for a lot of policy, a lot of significant legislation to emerge from this session. But even so, I think they're going to have to take some steps to put some distance between themselves and an increasingly unpopular governor.
All right. Well, that leads me into the first clip of tape I want to play. It's Sam Brownback from his State of the State. We'll play that, talk about it on the other side.
In 2011, I signed legislation stopping most taxpayer funding from going to Planned Parenthood. The time has come to finish the job. Planned Parenthood's trafficking of baby body parts is antithetical to our belief in human dignity. Today, I am directing Secretary Susan Mosier to ensure that not a single dollar of taxpayer money goes to Planned Parenthood through our Medicaid program. I welcome legislation that would enshrine this directive in state law.
All right. So a few days later, it's revealed that the Kansas Board of Healing Arts found no selling of fetal tissue in Kansas. So that brings us to the question of is this a diversion from budgetary issues? Will it, in fact, drive conservatives farther from moderates? I'm just throwing it out there on the table. Let's hear some thoughts.
Well, I think, Sam, just like we talked about with the Missouri legislature last week, in an election year session, we're going to see a series of social issue debates that are unlikely to result in any significant legislative outcomes, but bring out the vitriol, bring out the most energetic and extreme positions from both parties, frankly. And I think that's what we're looking at here. I think we're going to have Democrats going back to the microphones and pointing out that there's been no trafficking in body parts, pointing out that Medicaid dollars that go to Planned Parenthood pay for women's health services, not for abortions. But that really doesn't matter to the folks for whom this is red meat.
Yeah, I saw you nodding when Brian was talking about driving moderates farther away from conservatives from Republicans. Jimmy, what do you think?
I don't know. I don't think anybody wants to make this a huge political issue. I don't think a lot of people, frankly, will come to the defense of Planned Parenthood at the microphones in the House and Senate.
Aren't many of them there to come.
Correct. Moderate Republicans or Democrats. I just don't think anybody really wants to make it an issue. I mean, clearly, perceptions have been formed. Where the facts lie, unfortunately, in this situation and in others is almost irrelevant to the political equation. Brownback was simply trying to score points with his base. It was interesting, though, even the applause for that line was rather tepid. So I don't know how powerful a political issue it is. I do think Brian is exactly right. And in your question, Sam, you implied this, that is it a distraction from the budget issues, I think is what you asked for. I think there's going to be a lot of that, frankly. And I think the other thing that was interesting, and I wrote about this this week, is the governor's formed a rural health working group the closure of the hospital in southeast Kansas has gotten everybody's attention, and the governor doesn't want to be seen as being unsympathetic or doing nothing about that. So he's formed this working group, put Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier, who's a physician, in charge of it, and named all Republican legislators and some other folks to it. And he's given them a year to come up with some solutions for the problems in rural health care. And I think, there are some who clearly believe that that's an attempt to deflect attention from the ongoing effort to get Medicaid expansion in Kansas.
Yeah. Steve, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, the Planned Parenthood was one of several items in Brownback's speech where he sought to nationalize what problems he would describe in Kansas were nationalized type issues. So, he talked about the Syrian refugee issue and trying to repudiate Obama's policy to try to bring Syrians into the United States, wherever they may be. And there's, some question about whether Brownback even has any authority to prevent the resettlement of any Syrians or anyone else who's coming into the country. Seems pretty clear that he doesn't. He talked about Guantanamo Bay, and it struck me as a theme of, if you don't have a good story to tell, and I don't know that Brownback does, and his approval ratings would seem to reinforce that, you tell other stories. And many aspects of his speech, if he wasn't describing, part of the sunny picture in Kansas where it exists, he was describing some doom and gloom type situations coming from Washington, D.C. He did the same thing with Medicaid
Yeah, and that's a good point because, you know, he went back, he said Obamacare, i.e. the Affordable Care Act, health reform, was responsible largely for these problems in rural hospitals in Kansas. And then he never used the word Medicaid expansion or the term, but he said, you know, why would we expand Obamacare to solve problems that it caused? So I think you're right. I think that that was a strategic decision going in, and you heard that throughout the speech.
And then didn't mention the $200 million budget deficit, didn't mention...
which has now been closed on paper.
On paper. Right. But we'll see by the end of the session as more revenue forecasts come in.
Before I move on, I want to go back to something Jimmy just said. And I listened to the State of the State online because the video feed was not available. And I had the same feeling that you just – and you just said there was a tepid response.
Right.
And my feeling was listening to the speech – that I think you could say that about the entire speech, that it I think he seemed to lack a little energy. I think the chamber didn't seem quite excited about what he was saying. You were there. What do you think?
Well, I think there's still a lot of fatigue from last year, really, to be honest with you.
And he got
long and sustained applause when he walked into the chamber, but he didn't get much. He got kind of obligatory response from the Republicans for certain lines in the speeches, and I think you're right. It felt like there wasn't much energy in the chamber. And, all right, they had the longest session in state history last year, had to pass a huge tax increase, heading into an election year, worried still about the budget and the revenue situation. And I think they're dreading what might be coming. And I don't think there is a lot of energy. They don't want to be there very long. They want to get in, out, and on the campaign trail. And so I think that accounts for some of that.
Did it matter that it was the same night as the State of the Union address, that they literally had to clear the air by an hour to
I mean, it was the same night. It was a KU basketball game, State of the Union address. I mean,
KU basketball game. Now that might be an issue.
Right. But no, I just think it's just, you're right, it was kind of pro forma is the way it felt.
All right, I want to move on to law enforcement. I wrote a story last week about the Kansas Bureau of Investigation. I want to play just a quick part of my interview with KBI Director Kirk Thompson.
There is a large sector of Kansas that has a very limited law enforcement resource pool, and it's been our mission to support those areas. Out of the 500 in some cases that we took on last year, we also declined well in excess of 100 case requests.
All right, so the KBI is turning away 20% of casework. Highway Patrol still showed about 80 troopers. Both organizations are asking for more money. KHP wants an increase in motor vehicle registration of $7.50 a car from $10 to $17.50. KBI's asked for $1.6 million to enhance salaries to keep agents from leaving. We've already talked about staff shortages and the safety issues that come up with in Osawatomie. Mm-hmm. So does this have a chance of going anywhere, of getting some more money to keep some KBI agents and hire some more state troopers? I mean, these are real people who are being affected, crime victims whose cases aren't being investigated, a lot fewer drunk driving arrests by the and patrols by the KHP. So what's the
fiscal note for the Highway Patrol? What did you say it was?
Superintendent Mark Bruce asked for an increase from $10 to $17.50 for vehicle registrations. That he says that would pay for 75 more troopers. It appears the Capital Journal reported that the governor did not endorse that that proposal from.
What was the other proposal? You say $1.6 million?
Right. KBI is asking for just somewhere to find $1.6 million to enhance salaries because their people are leaving.
In the scheme of things, that $1.6 million is pretty small change.
Not very much.
And I would think that there will be plenty of folks in the legislature who will want to do something for law enforcement on the way out the door and as they hit the campaign trail. So I think those are the kinds of things that may very well get discussion, notwithstanding the fact that the governor didn't back the request. But
if there's any area that's going to get increased spending, it's going to be public safety, right?
Right.
It's hard to argue with. It's sort of like military spending on the federal level. There's really no arguing if KBI says they need it. I think the problem.
Well, the
KBI
has been saying they've needed it for some time, and there's been no money forthcoming.
So where do we think the Bank of KDOT seems to stand ready for raiding?
And thoughts on the Bank of KDOT? You know, when I interviewed Director Thompson, I suggested that he get to know that Mike King, the KDOT secretary, because he's got an extra $400 million now. Maybe he could spread a little bit
The Highway Patrol budget is part of KDOT's
part
budget.
Part of KDOT, right.
And so they did that at Wallow. I'll tell you, I attended the budget briefings last week, and as we were kind of joking a moment ago, Budget Secretary Sean Sullivan came forward, and that $190 million projected deficit in the fiscal year has been erased on paper through a combination of revenue transfers, an additional $25 million from KDOT and other places, and some spending cuts. And they've gone now to the Medicaid program, or the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance program. They took $17 million last year. What happened was, there's a little irony in this, when the Affordable Care Act passed, it said if the Children's Health Insurance Program is reauthorized, which it was last year, there'll be a 23% increase in the amount of money, the match for states. Well, that has given the state of Kansas a windfall in both last fiscal year and the upcoming one, and all of that additional money generated by that 23% increase in the match is now being swept out of the CHIP program to help cover the projected deficit.
If I'm a Kansas policymaker, I look just over the state line to what's going on with the roads in Missouri.
And let me just interject here that you are a brand new Kansan, and I couldn't be more pleased about that. Well, but go ahead.
We've lost another one.
Well, happy to be in Kansas. But I would say look at what's going on over on the other side of the state line in Missouri, where the funding for roads has traditionally been lower than what it should be. And they propped it up over the years with federal stabilization dollars and bond issuances. And now they've kind of reached the end of the road, no pun intended. And the diminution of those budgets over the years has taken its toll. And the problem with roads is once you start to chip away at that funding, it's hard to get it back. And particularly because the way the public and the lawmakers themselves see the roads, you know, if they see a surface that looks okay, they assume it's fine. But of course, you know, if you talk to an engineer, when you kind of, the real issues with roads over time, it's the subsurface. Right. It's the things you don't see that are the problems. And getting that money back once it's gone, just look at Missouri's receptiveness to sales tax increases for roads.
Well, Sam, should I disclose here that my wife is the former Secretary of Transportation in Kansas, so I hear a lot about roads.
Yeah, looks like you've done it, Jim.
I hear a lot about roads, Deb Miller. But you're exactly right. You know, many of you probably forgot, but when Kathleen Sebelius was running for governor against Jim Barnett, a state senator from Emporia, there was a famous incident in one of their debates where Kathleen Sebelius compared Missouri roads to 9/11 in terms of being dangerous, because it was well known that they were deteriorated and not in very good shape. And Kansas has a 30-year tradition now of really robust investment in the road program. And I think when you hear officials in the Brownback administration, Secretary King and others, say the roads are just fine, and they put out statistics and say, look, I mean, they're still just fine.
Sean was saying 87,
correct.
Sean Sullivan, 87%.
And he talked about roads and bridges and so forth. But the trouble is that when that starts to turn, it turns very quickly. And what Deb tells me often is that when you've invested in something for that long a period of time and you start to let it, as you mentioned, deteriorate, you know, once you reach that point where the deterioration is obvious and visible, you've wasted the previous investment. And the amount of money it takes to get you back to where you were, it's like exponentially more expensive. So the roads may be okay for now, but they are deteriorating, and the cost of getting them back up to spec will be much more than it otherwise would have been if we'd maintained the maintenance that was in the T-Works project.
So how far out is the Department of Transportation budgeting? Are they projecting a need for increased funding 2 years, 4 years, 6 years from now already?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, Sam would know more about that. They budget well ahead, well out, and they budget for bonding. And there have been a couple of advantageous things in the sense that oil prices are way down and bids are coming in lower. So there have been some savings in KDOT beyond what was originally anticipated. But it's also clear that the money that is supposed to be spent on really robust maintenance of the system is now being swept and used to fill projected budget deficits.
Yeah, well, in fact, you know, the T-Works program is ongoing. There's money there's projects and money that they've set aside for that. But when I did my KDOT story, I talked to the number two at KDOT, a gentleman, a lifelong career person at KDOT, Jerry Younger, who said, well, you know, maybe we can go a year by deferring this maintenance, and he's an engineer by training, which was vastly different than we heard from Sean Sullivan as he made his budget presentation. I want to just go back to that because, Jim, you were there, and I also want to get everybody's thoughts on this. So if you listen to the budget presentation, you would seem to, I think the you came away, they were trying to say everything's fine, and anything that is not fine is being distorted by the media. And so does the truth lie somewhere in between? I mean, is everything either, you know, are we portraying it as being awful and they're portraying it as being, you know, sunshine?
One thing I think you should think about there is, I don't want to get Clinton-esque on you, but, you know, it depends on how you define fine.
Right.
Let's just keep in mind that a lot of the people who are in charge in Topeka right now are small government conservatives. Mm. They think government grew too big. They think that, you know, people came in expecting substantial budget increases just as a matter of course and a matter of right for too many years. They think they're controlling and managing the budget. It's kind of the star of the beast mentality, where you cut off revenue and then it forces you to think a little bit harder about what your priorities are. So they think they're managing just fine. There have been no defaults. I mean, our bond rating has been, you know, lowered at the national level. But they think they're managing the situation. So, you know, I'm not sure they would think everything is fine. They're a little bit stumped about why the sales tax revenue is down and things like that. But they certainly don't see the problem in the same way that people who are perhaps more progressive in the sense that they think that, you know, government programs ought to keep up with inflation, et cetera, see it. So right. I think there is a true disconnect there in terms of how people perceive it.
Well, there was just a Wichita State study that came out this week that suggested that sales tax revenue for groceries is down where people can travel to another state. I go, frankly, full disclosure, I leave my beloved Kansas and go into Missouri to do my grocery shopping.
Sam.
Now. I know. Let me tell you something. I don't feel clean about it, but I do it anyway. And so I think it suggests that I think we do know a little bit why sales tax.
They don't think that's the major reason, though. At least the Sullivan doesn't. Right. I think there are other things going on.
Right. Steve?
Well, all of us in this room, we cover government. And you kind of see over time that people, lawmakers, a lot of them tend to sort of live in an echo chamber. And so if they're told by business interests or whoever else that, you know, things are okay, then they tend to believe it. And, you know, the thing with the state finances that I've observed is, you know, for a lot of people, you may not necessarily see what the effects of state finances, the decline in state finances are doing. And I think this is actually a big problem that the Kansas Democrats have had. And we may talk about that a little bit later.
Well, they can't show the harm.
Yeah.
The sky is falling, and yet it doesn't appear. Yeah.
I mean, if you rely on a safety net program, you know, a social program in Kansas, you feel it. You know it. But those tend not to be the most vocal people up in the Capitol.
Right.
And so, you know, I think if you're a lawmaker and you don't see that, then
they can be vocal, but they don't make campaign contributions.
Well, right. And for every, you know, for every lobbyist who's talking about issues with maybe perhaps, say, CanCare, you have several other lobbyists who are saying, no, this is actually working quite well. And so I think that's sort of the culture that you get, not just in Kansas government, but, you know, city councils, county commissions, all the way up the line.
Well, and you can hear legislators talk like a lot of the general public does, that, you know, you can make numbers say whatever you want. Who is to say that $100 million isn't going to materialize from somewhere else? And there's sort of this fantasy world in which we conduct what really does in many cases come down to hard number conversations you know, the past experience is that, yes, we're going to pass this budget. We're going to get revised revenue estimates later and we'll have to fix it. But for now, let's just press ahead. I think there's a case here of the legislators simply not dealing realistically with reality.
You know, having said all that, I think the point that you all made very early in the program about the need for some legislators who are running for re-election to distance themselves somewhat from the governor's policies. There's a Representative Mark Hutton from Wichita and Senator Jim Denning here in the Kansas City area have both talked about the need to revisit the tax cut plan insofar as restoring a part of that business income that was totally exempt in the bill. So I think you'll see it. I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not they raise that point this session or whether they will defer. But my guess is that they'll want to make some statement about it so that the people back home understand that they're trying to make the change, whether they're successful. And I'm sure they won't be. The governor's very much opposed to it, and I don't think they really want to wade into that as deeply as they did last year. But nevertheless, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what rhetoric we hear in regard to the tax policy as the session moves ahead.
But possibly only as a way to set it up for a more thorough conversation in 2017.
Absolutely. 2017 will be the time when we have a conversation, more thorough conversation about that, Medicaid expansion, and a host of other issues once the election is behind us.
Right. All right, I want to take one more trip around the table, but this time I want to focus on the 2016 election. I was on a panel yesterday in Lawrence with a couple of state legislators that we've had on this show, Susan Concannon, Don Hill, and there was a pretty lively discussion about whether or not moderates or even Democrats may be able to capture some seats in the 2016 election. And I just want to get some very quick thoughts from each one of you on whether you think that that's possible. There's been a lot of candidates filing early. I think there's going to be a lot of primaries. So what are our thoughts on that? Brian, let's start with you.
Well, I think it's possible, Sam. I think certainly what the Democrats have going for them is the very real risk that the conservative Republican leadership has overplayed its hand in how it's running the House and the Senate. But at the same time, I'm not overly optimistic. There was a press conference Thursday morning where the Democratic leaders of the House and Senate outlined their priorities. House Minority Leader Tom Burrows said, "Our budget is wrecked, schools are under attack, communities are less safe, and the economy isn't working for the middle-class family. Despite the problems our government created, our best days are ahead." So full of platitudes, lots of vision, but even the reporters at the press conference said, "Do you have some specific legislative proposals? Are there other bills you can point to that do those things?" And they don't. Mm-hmm. Anthony Hensley outlined a list of goals that, you know, was sort of American pie and puppies for everyone. No, it wasn't really. It was an efficient government. It was an open and transparent government. There isn't any there, at least in the minds of a lot of people who are watching what passes for Democratic leadership right now. And that's going to be a problem. We live in a time when the Republicans may be opening a door for Democratic gains, but there has to be something for people to turn to if they want to look in that direction. And I'm not seeing anything solid on the Democratic side.
Steve Ockrott, your thoughts on this upcoming election?
Yeah, I think I think Brian nailed it in terms of the disorganization among the Democrats and their ongoing struggle to do any kind of messaging or even consensus building, even perhaps even within their own party. I would look to some of the things that maybe the mainstream coalition is going to do to try to line up some moderate Republicans. And as we know, there's a real chasm between the conservatives and the moderate Republicans, particularly out in Johnson County. And I understand that there are some moderates who have been somewhat disconnected from the Republican establishment, not getting things like voter rolls, even things as simple as that, no support. Mm-hmm. And so I would look to organizations like that more than I would look toward the Kansas Democrats to make any real influence in this 2016 elections.
Jim McClain?
Well, I think both sides. I mean, I think there are going to be districts in which Republicans who aren't considered conservative enough are primaried by the conservative wing of the party. I think you're going to see a lot of that. I think you're also going to see moderates intentionally set up contests between themselves and conservatives, particularly in those districts that several years ago the conservatives swept a bunch of moderates out of office. Senator Brungardt in Salina, most famously Steve Morris, who was the president of the Senate out in southwest Kansas. There's a big primary now set up there between Representative Dahl and Senator Larry Powell, the person who beat Steve Morris, and that is clearly a moderate conservative battle. So I think you're going to see both sides look, you know, seat by seat in the legislature and try to make some gains. I would agree with the statement, though, that Democrats are going to have to pick their spots because, one, the party's in disarray at the state level. There are some races, frankly, where the Republican primary is the race. But Democrats will have a few opportunities if they can find good candidates and fund them and come up with a compelling message.
And if I can just add, Sam, I think Jim's exactly right. And they need to be thinking about 2018 at this point. Who are they going to put out in the forefront for? Will they ever recapture a statewide office? There is no pipeline cultivating Democratic leadership at the moment.
That's because they don't have a bench, and you have to have a deeper legislative bench for those people to emerge.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Jim McLean, KHI News Service, a reporting partner with us here at KCUR. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Beth.
Steve Vockrott, brand new Kansan. Couldn't be happier about that from the pitch, and my KCUR bunkie, Brian Ellison. This is the portion where we decide what music we're going to walk off on. We're going to go around the table. You will tell me the song that is on your mind. Well, now, whenever. And then I will choose. Brian, we start with you.
You know, in light of the budget challenges facing Kansas today, I think Running on Empty by Jackson Browne is
That was Senator Denning's choice.
Maybe that's why it was in my head.
That was a good one. Steve?
Well, one song that keeps playing in my mind as I hear the political rhetoric, the devolution of political rhetoric and establishing facts and to support the things politicians say. I would say, particularly in honor of his recent passing, but a song that's in my mind a lot lately is This Is Not America by David Bowie.
Wow. Well, that has zoomed to the top of the list. It's going to be hard, Jimmy.
Because I've given this a few full seconds of thought, and what popped into my head was the tune Free Falling by Tom Petty.
I think we had Free Falling on before, Matt? I can't remember. But you know what? We're going with Bowie. We're going
to
go with Bowie. Totally. We're going with Bowie. All right. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Find us on KCUR.org/statehouseblend. And they clear out a little room for us every Tuesday at 11 on KCUR's Up to Date. You want to follow me on the Twitter? I'll bet you do. I'm at Sam Zeff. Brian?
I'm at PTS Brian, and yes, I do want to follow you on Twitter, Sam.
And what the hell? We'll just go around the table. Steve, what's your...
I'm at ST_Vockrott, VOCKROTT.
You should be following Steve, by the way.
I don't know what
you
my should. Twitter handle is. I got one. But
all right. Well, you know what? We'll add that in post-production. All right. So before we go, we'd love it if you would come out to the Westport Flea Market on Thursday the 28th. We're going to be doing State House Blend Live or State House Blend Live. If you're a fan of the exclamation point.
I heard
point
the exclamation
there,
point that time.
They're on the website.
Did you steal Jeb Bush's exclamation point?
You know what? I think we did, but I don't think he's really using it much.
You know, Sam can fix it. I think.
Representative John Rubin, a Republican from Shawnee. Representative John Wilson, a Democrat from Lawrence, along with Steve Kraske, going to join me in front of a live audience to help celebrate our
That's a strong lineup.
50th State House Blend
It's just
episode.
Like the Super Bowl. It's the 50th one.
It is. That's Thursday the 28th at 7 p.m. Westport Flea Market. Damn good burgers there, by the way. The invite is right there at the top of KCUR.org. Come on out. You can be part of the podcast, and, you know, maybe we'll let you shout questions from the audience.
We should mention we'll do a Missouri version of this later this spring.
And
a live State House Blend.
Very excited about that as well. Thanks for wherever you're listening to us, on the podcast or on the radio. I'm Sam Zeff, and I'll see you around the radio. Clouds, a little piece of you. A little piece in me.